welcome to the Philadelphia Channel, spotlighting the innovators making meaningful impact throughout the region across a wide range of collaborative and creative fields, including philanthropy, education, technology, family life, social entrepreneurship, advocacy of the arts, and more. Here's your host, Robert Grimm.
Based in Philadelphia, the Lenfest Institute for Journalism is the first of its kind nonprofit organization whose sole mission is to develop and support sustainable business models for great local journalism across America. The Institute was founded in 2016 by cable television entrepreneur Jerry Lenfest to pursue innovative news initiatives, new technology, and new models for sustainable journalism. His vision in the Institute's guiding mission is that a great city needs and deserves a great news organization. He recognized that local journalism is in financial crisis just when our democracy needs it the most, and as he said, we're better than Philadelphia to invent the future of a free press. He also gave to the Institute his ownership of the Philadelphia Media Network, which includes the Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News, and the region's primary local news website, philly.com. They're now the largest newspapers in America, operated as a public benefit corporation under the nonprofit ownership of the Institute, and serve as a dynamic lab for its innovation efforts. The Institute's overseen by a board of managers, including news executives, media entrepreneurs, software and technology executives, philanthropists, community leaders, and leading academics. In September of 2016, Jim Friedlich, a veteran Wall Street Journal executive and media investor, was named the Lenfest Institute's executive director and CEO. Jim, good to have you with us today.
Oh, it's nice to be here. Thank you, Robert.
What's your perspective on the business model for journalism today? Why it's such a difficult environment?
Journalism for many, many years was supported by advertising sales, and the advertising model for newspapers, for magazines, even for television has changed quite radically. The main culprit has been the transition to digital advertising. Much of the revenue that used to come to newspapers goes to digital outlets like Google and Facebook. And that's put a lot of pressure on the business models for all kinds of journalism, but public service journalism in particular.
And yet at the same time, this creates a strong opportunity for innovation, doesn't it?
It does. The biggest innovation that we've seen on the business side of public service journalism at places like the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, where I came from, and the Washington Post, has been the advent of digital subscriptions. That is, people paying for the online content directly to the publisher, and those revenues supporting great journalism. What we've tried to do at the Lenfest Institute is bring those innovations to the local level. In many cases, national publications have not only survived but thrived in the current environment, but those innovations have not made it to the local level, and that's our mission.
And why do you feel that they haven't, in fact, made it to the local level when local news organizations can look toward these others for guidance and inspiration?
Well, it's partly the guidance and the inspiration, but it's also a need for expertise and a need, frankly, for capital. The Times, the Washington Post, the Financial Times, and others have had deeper-pocketed owners and more of a willingness and more of a vision to invest in the long term. For an array of reasons, local news has often not spent the money or had the foresight to get ahead of the digital curve.
But they certainly recognize the digital curve, don't they?
They sure do. I think it's painfully obvious now that hindsight is 20/20, as the saying goes, that we should have been investing more in the past, but there's certainly the opportunity to catch up.
And what do you see as the most prominent trends or strategies for emergent business models with local news?
The biggest trend is that of user payments for not only important news, but a strong user experience. Users will pay for content that they find valuable in the first place, but also in a form that they find useful and user-friendly. And increasingly, that is content that people find helpful on their phones. Of all the local newspapers that we look at around the country, most of them have 60, 70% of their digital users consuming content on the phone. And the younger the reader, the more likely they are to consume all of their news and information on their smartphones. So the biggest trend is not just porting the news or adapting the news for the phone, but really developing product that is native to the phone. And those who've done that best have reaped the rewards.
And product native to the smartphones would help to expand the role of traditional journalism, wouldn't it?
It expands the role of traditional journalism in several different ways. If you think about how you consume content yourself or how your listeners consume content, there's been enormous growth in audio and the advent of podcasts. Podcasting itself was not even a phrase in the language 5-10 years ago, and now it's a common part of our consumption. And that really is native to the phone or native to connected cars. So podcasting is one great example. The digital alert, the news update that you get throughout the day from your chosen publications or from your Facebook feed is another example. That was in place of watching the news at 6 o'clock at night or reading the morning or even the afternoon paper historically. This is news that finds you throughout the day. And that, again, is native to the phone. That takes advantage of the medium in a way that users find pleasing.
And you're seeing users directly picking up on this in visibility and in how they interact and really in users themselves, don't you?
It has a number of benefits. The most important is that it keeps people informed and engaged with news and the world around them. It also provides an on-ramp for brands that want to engage with users. Often, the first exposure that someone has to Philly.com is an alert on their phone or a story that they Googled or saw on Facebook about a food review or about the Eagles or about city government. That then leads to a more regular daily habit that often leads to subscription. So it's not only a brand extension, but an on-ramp or a digital driveway for the user.
And tell me about the subscription model. How have you seen that develop?
The digital subscription goes back some 20 years. We were actually an innovator in this space at the Wall Street Journal. The Wall Street Journal was high quality, high cost business news. And when newspapers began to have a presence on the internet, we felt almost uniquely that we had to charge for and could charge for and should charge for the content online. Others, including the New York Times, were giving it away for free. And we thought that was not sustainable in the long run as people began to move from print to print and digital to ultimately a digital-only consumption habit. So we experimented with several different models that have been borne out over the years. One was what was called a paywall. That meant you pay your subscription, you get the content and the news. If you don't, you don't. That gave way to something called the metered model. And the metered model is what you experience yourself more often than not, which is you'll read 4, 5, 6, 10 articles, and then a message will come up and say, hey, if you like Philly.com or if you like the Minneapolis Star Tribune or the Dallas Morning News this much, please pay to subscribe. That allows people to get a taste of the news and to develop a habit of hearing from and interacting with the brand before putting up the wall. And that has turned out to be the most effective. It's kind of a freemium model that we see in other industries as well.
And are you seeing local news organizations picking up on that model and really making the most of it?
Yes and no. I think they're picking up on that model. I'm not sure we're all making the most of it quite yet. The product itself has to be worth paying for, and the news staff and the journalism itself sufficient to be worth people's money. The mere fact that we're asking people to pay doesn't necessarily mean that the content is worth paying for. Where it is, and this has been the case in Philadelphia, it has been quite successful. The Linfest Institute and the Philadelphia Inquirer itself have reinvested substantially in the news content, in a reinvigorated newsroom, in the team and staff and the diverse voices that are required of a great American newspaper. And people are paying for it both in print and in digital. In other cities, sadly, the owners have cut back substantially and the papers are a shadow of their former selves, and it's kind of a downward spiral. We see that in a number of American cities that are emerging as what we call news deserts, where there's a paucity of quality content and therefore a very, very challenged business model.
And hopefully those cities can turn to the Linfest Institute for guidance, as I mentioned before, about how to proceed. And you mentioned the product itself and the reinvigorated content. That brings to mind Spotlight PA, which you just launched. It's really an unprecedented public service journalism collaborative. It's between the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and LNP Media Group in Lancaster to increase investigative and news coverage of the state capital, Harrisburg, at a time of really fewer journalistic resources both there and nationwide. Tell us about its mission.
Spotlight PA was founded on the premise that what happens in state capitals and in Harrisburg in particular is extraordinarily important to the citizens of the Commonwealth. Pennsylvania is one of the half dozen or so largest state budgets in the country for an array of reasons, both the culture of politics in the state and some of the so-called sunshine laws in the state. It is not the most transparent. So Spotlight PA was founded to bring transparency, investigative news, enterprise journalism, explanatory journalism to the state of Pennsylvania. The partners came together on the view that the whole could be greater than the sum of the parts. The Philadelphia Inquirer, LNP Media, and the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette are the three largest newspapers in the state. They have respect for each other. They had collaborated and created joint coverage in the past. They made the decision to put egos aside and merge the three news bureaus into a single entity without consolidating, without cutting any of the team, but rather to combine forces under a single editor. And that's unusual, if not unique, in our business. Usually, news organizations view each other as competitors rather than collaborators in the public interest. On top of that team, which is roughly six journalists combined, we've provided Linfest funds and other foundation funding to double the size of the team. So the team of six will go to a team of roughly 12 and will provide greatly enhanced coverage of the state capitol for the benefit of the whole state.
You mentioned collaboration a few times, which is such a crucial element. And Spotlight PA will also work with students and professional staff at Temple University's Klein College of Media and Communication. How did this come about?
It came about in two ways. This is a very personal business where personal ties and personal backgrounds make a great deal of difference. And in that sense, it's probably like lots of other businesses. But in this case, the dean of the Klein School is David Boardman. David is the former executive editor of the Seattle Times, which is best known for its Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative news acumen. David is also the chairman of the Linfest Institute. So the first personal connection was between David and the editors of the Philadelphia Inquirer and the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette as well. The second was that there's a professor at Temple named Aaron Pilhofer, who's a former New York Times news executive. And at the New York Times, Aaron was in charge of data journalism and data visualization, and both of which are core to investigative news in America. This is the parsing of public information and documents and shining light on public information that is hard for the layman to do. So Aaron created a class to teach young people and aspiring journalists how to be effective data journalists. And data journalists need data and need a story to cover. So it was a marriage between his passion, his capability, and the needs of the state capitol.
And now a word from Arch Street Press. In its review, the Philadelphia Social Innovations Journal had this to say about Gendership 1.0, Beyond Leadership Toward Liberating the Creative Soul. David Castro's book does something courageous that we haven't seen before in this genre. He questions the very concept of leadership itself, thinking through its limitations. He meditates on specific and interrelated organizational practices central to creativity within groups. Listening, co-thinking, co-visioning, relationships, conflict and learning, systems thinking, creativity, and group dynamics. Castro invites us to think about ways this community practice of creativity is central to human progress and even to human identity. We now return to Jim and Robert.
There's a new policy and civic engagement-focused news enterprise. It's led by Harrisburg's WITF Public Media. This is also a key partnership, isn't it, with PA Post?
PA Post was started by WITF in Harrisburg, which is the public radio and television entity in the state capitol. And PA Post has put together a network of like-minded public media organizations and others across the state, mainly in radio, but not exclusively. So WHYY, for example, here in Philadelphia, is a part of their network. They have reporters and editors of their own. They also have a public meeting and public engagement capability that we don't have, and they have access to the public media airwaves and a physical presence in Harrisburg. So they are a distribution partner for us and a co-reporting partner for us, and it is a marriage of our collaboration and their collaboration. We thought, again, 1 + 1 = 3.
And it'll also contribute to meaningful transparency, won't it?
The goal is to shine a light on the processes of government and the electoral process and the key issues that matter for the state, whether it's education spending or infrastructure spending or health and the environment. All of these mission-critical areas of coverage have been underfunded and deserve much greater resources. And it's not to suggest that state government keeps things hidden, but rather that it requires someone acting in the public good and serving as a watchdog to really bring things to light.
And these collaborative reporting initiatives really help local news organizations maximize resources and expand coverage when many are cutting back. This should be replicable to other states as well, shouldn't it?
We're already seeing similar efforts and other states reaching out to us about the model and how it might apply to them. There are very interesting experiments and statehouse news operations in places like Texas. The Texas Tribune, we believe, is the largest statehouse news organization in the country operating out of Austin. There's a group in California called Cal Matters out of Sacramento, and they've now reached out to us asking how this collaboration works and how they might replicate it.
And tell us about the Knight Lenfest Newsroom Initiative as a national program.
The Knight Lenfest Newsroom Initiative is a collaboration, again, that word again, between the Knight Foundation and the Lenfest Institute. The Knight Foundation is the largest foundation-based journalism funder in America. It's based in Miami, but it is the family foundation of the former Knight Ritter newspaper company. And they have a particular mission to support civic engagement and journalism and culture in former Knight cities. And Philadelphia is a former Knight city in that the Philadelphia Inquirer and Daily News had been owned by Knight Ritter going back about a decade. So we have been collaborating closely with the Knight Foundation on the advancement of the Philadelphia Inquirer, but also similar newspapers in similar metropolitan regions around the country. And what that means in tangible terms is that we've created a series of peer-to-peer convenings and training workshops and support functions for news operations in places like San Jose or Denver or Dallas or Charlotte or Minneapolis. And we bring newspapers together 4 times a year to compare how their transition to digital and their evolution is going, what's working in one place, how it could be arbitraged to another place. In some cases, we provide not only the training, but funding specific initiatives. It's a way of scaling our work such that what happens in Philadelphia doesn't necessarily stay in Philadelphia.
And it's also a way to engage readers on multiple platforms, building digital revenue streams, ensuring their long-term sustainability, isn't it?
That's certainly the goal. We have a number of sessions and ongoing collaborative activities across newspapers that deal with how to make money on events, how to improve digital advertising performance, how to secure digital user revenues, how best to create an experience that users are happy to pay for.
And these sustainable business models are really key, aren't they?
It's at the core of what Jerry Lenfest charged us with. Jerry was deeply devoted to journalism and the First Amendment and free speech in Philadelphia and around the country. He said so many times, we're better than in Philadelphia to invent the future of a free press. And we're highly conscious that ours is an effort in the birthplace of the First Amendment. At the same time, it's less the journalism that's broken than the business model. And we were conceived and built as an institute to find sustainable business models for great public service journalism. Journalism itself is not the problem. The problem is finding ways to pay for it in the long run.
And you mentioned great public service journalism. That brings to mind the Lenfest Council for Journalism and Democracy. In just the last few months, the Inquirer has published really extraordinary investigative news coverage of the local opioid crisis, of the plight of local immigrants, of asbestos in our public schools, and reports on state and city government. And these have had a tremendous impact on our community, haven't they?
They've had enormous impact on the community. The issues themselves have been brought to light. The coverage has been both illuminating to the problem, but also to the solution. There's a growing trend in journalism now called solutions journalism. Solutions journalism is an effort to not only shine light on the problem, but also to suggest solutions. So the coverage of asbestos in public schools, which is part of a series called Toxic City, went into schools, worked with teachers, worked with students, worked with parents to identify which schools had the biggest issues. We provided grant funding to actually test for asbestos and test for lead in the schools themselves. That's typically not the role of a newsroom to do the actual scientific testing, but we thought here it was core to the reporting. But the reporting didn't stop there. It went on to advocate for actual change and remediation. And within just a couple of weeks of the investigation being published, the governor announced emergency funding for the cleanup of several dozen Philadelphia schools.
And this also shows the benefits of having citizens themselves directly involved, doesn't it?
I think when reporters talk to 120 teachers and parents and kids, or when the citizens themselves are involved in the testing and in the advocacy for remediation, that has an enormous impact. It's not a story coming from Woodward and Bernstein. It's a story coming from the community itself. So that's demonstrably the case, that the more people are listened to, the more they appreciate their voice being heard.
And you mentioned solutions journalism, which is such a powerful framework, as is great public service journalism. Well, on that note, listeners can find out more about the Lenfest Institute online at lenfestinstitute.org and can support its groundbreaking initiatives with donations through the Philadelphia Foundation. Jim, all the best with your vital work, and we're much looking forward to what's ahead.
Thank you, Robert. I really appreciate it.
Access, stream, and download the Philadelphia Channel biweekly, part of the International Innovate podcast series on PRX, the Public Radio Exchange, iTunes, and online at innovatepodcast.org. On behalf of the Philadelphia Channel team and our collaborators, good to have you join us.